It's 2035. Muskie fishing has been outlawed for decades, but a rogue band of renegades take to the northern waters, armed with wobbles, weagles, and booker tails. You're listening to the Muskie 360 Podcast. Ha 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 ha!
The Muskie 360 Podcast. Yes, we're idiots. Yes, that is the dumbest intro you've ever heard. But the last two podcasts have been super dry because we haven't had our Pepsis. But I have had like way too many. I'm going to open another one right now. And the guru is neck deep in Tennessee moonshine that I sent him home with. How you doing, guru?
I'm doing good, Steve.
So anyway... You know, people been emailing. They said, "Hey, the last two podcasts, you guys weren't crazy. We're off the chain today. I think just slightly. I'm slightly off the chain.
It's gonna be crazy.
Crazy. Woo! As crazy as you can get in the audio format. Listen, if it's on video, it'll be NC-17. I'm very scantily clad right now, Tyler. So, and I promise." The return of the dude. The dude will be here. The dude has been out duding on the dude boat. I've been Steven on the Steve boat. Guru has been guruing on the guru boat. And
we've all been catching lots of fish.
And yes.
Keeping busy.
The guru came down. We fished. We conquered. We did very well. Did we not, the guru?
We did. We had a blast.
And
kick some butts.
There's going to be some clips on that on the app here real soon for you folks. But one thing I wanted to do, you dropped him off at the house or whatever. He drove home in a bit ago. I called Joe because we had a great question about moon phase. So we're going to get to that in a minute. So Joe's going to be on here and jump in here with basically the master class on how to work moon phase. But the rest of it is me and the guru being morons. And answering your questions.
But,
this is what, listen, it's a free podcast, so you got to put up with the dumb shit. Okay? So, very important musky stuff there. Anyway, moving on quickly to the musky news of the day. You and a partner, Chad, correct? Went out and fished the PMTT, dude. What's sort of the news on that? What was that experience like for you fishing the Eagle River PMTT?
I personally have never fished it before. It was a new experience for me. There were a lot of anglers out there. It was tough fishing conditions. It was a cool experience, man. I've never done a tournament before. It was neat.
What do you think if somebody like is listening and they've never fished a tournament? Like, what was your takeaway? Because that's why I asked you, because I know it was your first time out there. I mean, you were fishing with Chad. Was it Ronkowski, right? I'm horrible with these last names. You got these skis and these and the. Anyway,
yeah,
I do well with redneck last names like Tom Jackson. But anyway, so he's won the whole shooting match before, right?
Yeah, he's won it before.
Like, did he win just like a leg ever? He won the whole PMTT, I think. Correct.
He won the Northern
whatever. Whatever. Yeah. But what was it like fishing with a dude like that's won that? Like, is it, how's it different from a normal day on the water?
It is like you're fishing to win money, so there's like an extra drive to fish harder and break down what the fish are doing faster at a, you know, more like higher octane kind of fishing,
right? Which is already this stuff's already a pain in the butt.
Yeah, it's already musky stuck. All
right, right. Maybe absolutely.
It's on another level of
suckitude.
Yeah, it's on another level of crazy, in a good way.
Right.
And I had a lot of fun fishing it. There's just Eagle River chain.
Yeah. I was gonna say, you like, I don't know if it's inside baseball or not, or I should say it, but you guys were just a couple like fish shaking off that just weren't hooked that great from, could have been the whole shooting match. You know what I'm saying?
It's just like, we were close. If we would have we lost a couple fish, and if we would have gotten them, we would have placed somewhere.
Isn't that ridiculous? It's like, you know, how long have you gone, or Chad's gone, you never lose a fish, and then money's on the line and stuff's going. That's why I don't fish tournaments. That stuff's just, like, stressful to me. I don't know. Anyway, I am way Pepsi'd up this evening, if you can't tell, folks. So I'm going to shut up. We're going to get into what matters here, which is Joe Booker talking about the moon phase. The moon phase madness. Give us your best wolf howl, Tyler.
Ow!
Ow! It's Joe Booker with moon phase madness.
Yeah, baby.
All right, guys. So I've got the best question from a guy named Dennis. Dennis wrote two messages in. And I called in the super ultimate pro for you, Dennis. So his Ask a Pro question is this. He said, can someone please unravel the mysteries of the moon and how it affects muskie fishing? I know that moonrise and moonset are important. I know that sunrise and sunset are important. I know that majors and minors are important, and the app makes finding these very simple for us. But he said, but I don't know how or why they're important. What takes priority? Where do they stand in relevance to weather? And if you could get the musky godfather, Joe Booker himself, to help explain moon phases to everybody, it'd be greatly appreciated. Dennis says, I'm pushing 50 now. I need to fish more cerebral. I need to fish smarter, not harder. Can Joe help me? I've got him on the line, Mr. Musky Godfather himself. So
interesting. You know, that was a very well described question, and mm-hmm. Dennis he's already fishing very cerebrally when you think about he knows this, he knows that, he knows moonrise, he knows moonset, he knows sunset, and he knows these things that make a difference, but he doesn't know why. The easiest way for me to explain this, and I stumbled on this whole moon thing. Just like you're still guiding out there, and you know when you're mm-hmm. out there in the water, you see things, and then you go, well, gee whiz, we've been fishing for 9 hours. There's been no weather change or anything. Why did that fish strike when it did? Mm-hmm. And you're sitting there sipping on a coffee or a cold iced tea or whatever, and you look up and you go, oh, look at that. The moon just came up here. You know, it's like 3 o'clock in the afternoon. It's like, hey, wait a minute, you know? And you know, I started seeing stuff like that. And then even like, for example, after sunset, you know, I remember distinctly one time being out in the water. This is years ago, and I'm guiding a party, and you know, it was about this time of the year too, where you have these, you know, it's just super hot, and the dog days have hit, and you've got, you know, no wind blowing, and I've been taking all my customers out after supper, and we're fishing and fishing and fishing and fishing, and nothing, and sunset, nothing. And then all of a sudden, you know, the lake explodes, and we catch like 3 or 4 fish, and then have a fifth one on, and we lose it, and then it goes dead, and mm-hmm. and it went dead, and the moon was rising, and you know, in the night sky right after dark, mm-hmm. and I started to go, bingo, something's going on here. And I guess to make this really simple, and you know, the why, and it's the way I look at it, because I am no scientist. I'm just one of these guys that looks at things and tries to draw conclusions and tries to make the game more predictable. It's never totally predictable, but to make the game more predictable so you can be in good spots at good times, it's pretty logical when you think about it, right? Mm-hmm. The moon rises and the moon sets every day. The sun rises and the sun sets every day. And both the sun and the moon, the solar and the lunar influence, triggers everything in the ecosystem. It triggers the way plants grow. It triggers the way plankton, you know, it triggers zooplankton and phytoplankton. It triggers the entire ecosystem it triggers tides.
Yeah.
You know, so in the world of wild creatures, my opinion, being both a hunter and a fisherman, I see that the living creatures, wild living creatures, whether it's fish or game, they really react, they live and react to the environment.
Yeah.
You know, they live and react to the sun going up and the sun going down, the moon going up and the moon going down. They react to those things. That's the way they live. It triggers the wind to blow, it triggers thermals, you know, the wind thermals, heat thermals to do what they do every day. And Why does it affect fish and game the way it does? Is it gravitational pull? Is it light changing? I think it's all of those things.
Yeah.
But I think the bottom line is, to make it really simple, is it not only affects muskies. This is the thing that muskie guys got to always understand. This does not only affect muskies.
No,
it
affects the whole food chain.
It affects the whole food chain.
Yeah.
Yeah, so it's affecting the whole food chain. It's affecting insect hatches. It's affecting the way animals get up, you know, out of their beds and feed, and it's just one of those four things. Now, Dennis mentioned weather. That's the other factor. And when you have localized weather sometimes trumps sunrise and sunset and moonrise and moonset. Mm-hmm. in terms of, it adds another, and that's another triggering factor to any day of fishing. When you have frontal activity, even when you have subtle activity like cloud cover moving in. I know where you're fishing. I know that when you're out there on those waters down south and you're fishing, especially in the heat right now, when you have clouds come in, sometimes that probably makes a big difference.
Oh yeah, for right? me and the fish. I'm praying
for you and the fish. Yes, yeah. And that's where I'm going with this. That is another cosmic influence.
Yeah.
It changes. It's these are subtle things that happen. Wind switches. You know, the little shifts in wind. Even a wind that doesn't even shift, but it all of a sudden picks up in velocity or it dies down. You know, a lot of times when you're fishing in the evening, as soon as that wind dies down, within minutes, there's a bite that happens. Mm-hmm. And in the morning, you know, a lot of times you'll have a slow bite in the morning, or there'll be a bite that's related to no wind. And then all of a sudden you have the wind starts, that first morning wind blows. And a lot of times, by the way, that's also triggered by sunrise. It's a thermal thing. And as soon as the sun's up for an hour or so, it heats the ground up and boom, the wind starts to blow. So they're all kind of connected. And I tried to make this simple, but maybe I made it complicated. But
you're spot on, because it's not just solar lunar. It's everything above. And I think that's where it gets convoluted at times for people.
Well, I think the big thing is the people, to make it really simple, you just think about it, that the sun's got to rise, the sun's got to set, the moon's got to rise, the moon's got to set every day.
Yeah.
And when they do, that triggers a light change. It triggers a gravitational change. It triggers all these other things in the system to start moving and feeding. And, you know, the big thing that's hard for musky guys and fishermen in general to really lock onto is that sunrise and sunset are pretty predictable.
Right.
You know, even though they change a little bit every day. But the key thing that anglers got, especially musky guys, want to always be visiting our moon app, the part of our app, is mm-hmm. because the moon phase changes significantly.
Yeah.
Every single day. For example, tonight we're getting close to the full moon, and the moon rose today at about 5:15, 5:20 here.
Right.
And the one fish we caught was right there at that time. The fish we caught tonight was right at moonrise. Now, tomorrow night we have a moonrise that's over an hour later than this.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, if you just look at the theory that we're talking about here, that moonrise is an hour later. Well, the bite should probably be an hour later tomorrow,
yeah,
right? And it probably will.
Absolutely. And the one thing I'll pick your brain on is this, and I think a lot of people are always wondering where to take this. You know, he's sort of stacking up the relevance of the moon, the relevance of the weather, you know, conditions. And I think everybody's sort of looking for like that magic bullet or that silver bullet. And,
yeah.
And I think it's one thing, and it's not answering a question. It's more of a statement than anything. It's like when you and I fish together, you're fishing or I'm fishing or whatever, it's everything. It's
yes.
It's not one or the other. I mean, take that where you will, but am I correct on that front, you think? It's like you got to get a look at the big picture, I think. More
well, I'll tell you, our friend Dennis that wrote us, and anybody else has listened to the podcast, and there's several examples on my YouTube channel, but mm-hmm. probably one of the coolest, most ultimate examples of late is the hunt for Goliath.
Mm-hmm.
The Hunt for Goliath episode, seek it out, Dennis, and watch it, because this gives you the answer as to how I approach and how you should approach using the moon. We raised Goliath, this fish, before before we caught it, the day before we caught it, on no peak.
Right.
You just raised the fish. And so my goal and my strategy was to come back on that great big fish, you know, when everything was in my favor. The next night I had a moonrise that coincided with sunset. It was that perfect night, you know, that's the peak full moon. So the moon mm-hmm. was going to rise as the sun set. And I even had a third factor in my favor. And Chaz and I talk about this on this episode, mm-hmm. is that there was a rumbling thunderstorm in the distance.
Right.
So you're out on a body of water. Here's where I'm going with this. You're on a body of water. Okay. And it can be a small body of water. It can be a monstrosity like Lake of the Woods. And you go, okay, where should I be? When should I hit that big fish? I know where there's a big fish. I'm not mm-hmm. trying to look for one. I know that fish is there. What's the most optimum time to be on that spot that will help give me that extra edge to trigger that fish? I want to be on that spot where I saw Goliath on moonrise.
Mm-hmm.
On sunset or moonrise, if they coincide together, I want to be on that spot at that time. When I had a thunderstorm approaching and those two things happening, when I pulled into that spot, I, you know, my hair was standing on end.
Before you even make a cast. Yeah.
Because you know, if this fish is going to bite, you know, this is the time. And the fish did bite.
Yeah.
And so, you know, that's sometimes what it takes to get one of these big fish to go, especially when you've got one pegged. Now, taking that one step further in answering Dennis's question is go to your best spots when you in the peaks, you know, so mm-hmm. you maximize your opportunities, you maximize your time. A lot of the people up here, you know, even in my neck of the woods in northern Wisconsin that work full-time jobs and stuff, they get off in the evening, you know, they gauge their fishing around the sunset, you know, where they're going to be. Where they're going to be on their best spot at sunset. You're going to be on their best spot, you know, when the moon is rising, moon is setting, depending upon what moon phase you're in. Going to be on your best spot during a weather change. And it's pretty simple and pretty logical. And yet, you know, a lot of people just fish randomly on any lake on any given day and go, well, you know, you know, I'm just gonna fish four or five spots tonight, and whatever happens, happens. Instead of going, no, I'm gonna fish these four or five spots, but I want to be on the spot on sunset. Right. I want to be on the spot, you know, during moonrise. Yeah. So I have a moonrise tomorrow night at around 6:30.
Mm-hmm.
And I want to be on my best spot at moonrise tomorrow.
Let's say this, like Dennis. You know, Dennis is looking for how can I fish smarter, right?
That's how you fish smarter.
Right. And that's another thing I would interject on that is you're thinking ahead there, but let's say if he doesn't have a big fish to work, mm-hmm. this goes back to, and this is what I'm saying about that part and parcel. It's not the silver bullet, but use that moon phase data when you're doing your map work. And you go, I've got a feeling about this hump or this saddle or this zone on this lake or this reef, right? So you don't know where a big fish is. Go check those spots that look good on the map.
At good times
and stop blowing. Yes. Don't blow good spots and say there's no fish there. And I think because you know, if I'm confronted with a new body of water, this goes all the way back to looking at a paper map or looking at your fish finder and structure fishing. It's part and parcel. Do the homework and then pick the best spots and then go back to them at the best times. And then, like you said, if you get the bonus of weather, I mean, before I go out, and I don't know how your headset is, but before I go out, I just assume the weather's going to be against me. You know what I'm saying? You know, you might get lucky and you got clouds, you got whatever, but that's just where I go is like the weather's going to be against me. So, you know, just doing that homework. I mean, I don't know if you can take that any further on that, but it just my thought.
No, you're absolutely right. In fact, I'm thinking of one particular spot that it took years to crack it. Mm-hmm. It's one of those spots that, you know, back in your, like your dad has been reading my article since the old days of Fishing Facts with you. This is like an old Fishing Facts magazine where you draw the photos out, you set the illustration and go, right, this is the best looking musky spot on this lake. Well, there was this spot on Lake of the Woods that went from a great big open piece of water and it necked down into this almost like a river mouth. Mm-hmm. And then right at the river mouth, there was an island with a boulder bar sticking off it. And when the wind was out of a certain direction, you know, it would just be pounding in that thing. And boy, it's just, you know, it's like, you look at it on paper, go, that's a big fish spot. Right. Mm-hmm. And I go by there and fish that spot. And I never score on that spot. I go, how can there not be a muskie on that spot? And then finally, you know, one day I'm in that area and I go, I'm going to go fish that spot, you know, at the best time.
Right.
I'm going to go fish that spot with a moon peak. And I fished it. There was a moon peak, you know, like a mid morning moon peak. And it was, moonset. Mm-hmm. It was moonset, had a storm system approaching. Wind was pounding into that spot and I pulled into it again. I go, and again, started fishing that spot going, this spot looks good. I got a feeling about it. I have a hunch about it that this spot should produce. Right.
Right.
And it did. And I caught a fish over 40 pounds. First muskie ever caught off the spot. Oh. The first muskie ever caught off that spot. It was it was an absolute tank. And, it was like the first fish I ever caught on the Long Ranger. We first designed the Long Ranger muskie tournament series for St. Croix. And I remember that was like the maiden voyage of that rod series. And I remember catching that fish on that rod. It's like, oh man,
yeah,
this rod fights at, you know, the medium light action or medium heavy, excuse me, action in a 9-foot rod is such a nice stick for fighting those big fish.
Monster, and, yeah.
Yeah, but it was, but it, right, it answers the thing you just said. You know, boy, some of these spots, you have a hunch about them. They look good. They got the right look.
Right.
But you know, you got to visit those spots at good times to double check them and see. And you know, the other thing too about fishing spots like that is that you have to find out what quirk. Some of those spots are quirky, and then and you've got your spots down there in Tennessee. I know you do. They're quirky.
Oh yeah,
they're just quirky.
Stupid. Yeah.
And then right, yeah. And then you, but then when you pull in there, you know, when the conditions are right, and you know the cosmic influences are right, you pull in and you go, okay, baby, let's have at it. And, you know, and you know they're good, right?
Yeah, and but you said that, which you know, to, I guess to summarize, because it because me and you could go on forever, and we're horrible about that. And that's a good thing, but what I'm getting is this, is like the moon phase isn't going to fix bad retrieves. It's not going to fix bad figure eights. It's not going to fix, I don't know how to find a spot on the lake that's worth fishing. It's what me and you, and I think what he said, and he expanded on his thing going, I know these guys that use this and they do so well with it. It complements your game. It's just that extra edge. Once all the other pieces are in place,
it's very comparable. You've heard me do it many times. You know, my old football coach days is I always use these football analogies, and it's like you take a guy who's been playing quarterback like an Aaron Rodgers. You know, I'm a Green Bay Packer fan, obviously.
Right.
You take a guy when he pulls up to the line of scrimmage.
Yeah,
he sees that defense and he already knows what he's already changed the call. He knows what he's going to call.
Yeah.
And it's, so he's got all those weapons. He's got all those skills in place. He's got the skills in his hands. He's got the skilled players around him. He's got the skills that, you know, in his brain, and skilled anglers are very much the same. Skilled anglers use the moon to their advantage. They have the skills. They do the good figure eights. They, you know, they work their baits properly. They run their bow properly. They just put themselves in better situations to score bigger because they also are using weather and they're using the moon to their advantage.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. Couldn't say it better, man. Well, guys, we keep these exciting upstarts coming here on the podcast. I'm sure you'll be hearing more about this young man, Joe Bucher, in the future. I'm sure you're going to have an illustrious career. Thank you. I'm glad I could give you your big break here on the podcast for chiming in.
We do have a lot of fun, don't we?
We do, man.
Yeah, and it's just great to have discussions like this and take another piece of our audience and our app users and show them the value of all the different things that we have on the app. And the podcast is definitely one of them. And the discussion on the moon phase is so appropriate right now, especially going into, you know, some of the best fishing of the year. Utilizing the moon even to prepare your trips. And when you're planning trips, is if you can plan your trips around moon peaks, it just gives you one more edge.
Yeah, we run, and it got, if you haven't looked though, we run the month ahead. We have it out to October right now. You can just look at the full month and it'll be like a moon calendar, you know.
Yes.
Where you can see here's the full moon week, here's the new moon week, all that stuff. And Joe, you plan your trips that way to Canada.
I try to, and I'll tell you the other thing that, you know, we use the app and the moon phases on the app for is that when we're on trips and we're on any daily fishing excursion on non-peak moon periods, you can still catch them, guys and gals. You can still catch them. You know, it's just that they're usually, those days are not as good, but there's a moon peak. There is a moon peak on every one of those days, and there's still a sunrise and there's still a sunset.
Absolutely. Couldn't have said it better. Dennis, you asked for a great answer. You got a great answer from the Book Daddy himself on the Musky 360 podcast. Thank you, Joe. I know we'll be talking to you again here real soon.
Take care, Steve.
All right, be good. Well, that pretty much sums it up. I can't, if you want to know how to work the moon phase, Joe pretty much nailed it.
He's the master, man.
He's the master. So me and the guru are going to get to the rest of the questions here. First one up is from Shane. Shane says, when fishing Canadian Shield Lakes in July and August, is there any certain way you guys start out your day as far as starting out at a certain type of structure in the morning, then switching to something different in the afternoon? Same with like dusk to dawn. Well, number one, Shane, if you are in Canada and you are fishing Canadian Shield Lakes right now, I'm mad at you.
I'm just going to say. Very lucky man.
Just
very lucky
say
man.
It. Not fair. Keep it to yourself, bro. No kidding, dude. It's awesome. This is, talk about a killer year if you're a Canadian musky angler. You know, like
you have zero pressure from us. We're not coming up there.
We're
and
not coming
up.
Fish. You know, which is always a complaint, and I get it, man. It's like we're rolling into your country and like beating up your fish. So, yeah, go out there and kill them, dude. Just kick some major butt. Anyway, as far as like July, so my experience in July has been weeds with reefs in the evening, right? That's usually my game plan if I'm fishing a shield. So if you're talking shield, you're in my head, and we're talking Lac Seul, Eagle, Lake of the Woods. You know, there's some other stuff that fall in that, but those are the big three. Those are the mamma jammas, if you will.
I do the same thing with weeds kind of in the morning and rocks in the evening. You know, those rocks at the end of the day, they absorb all that sunlight. They're hot, man.
Hot rocks.
Near, when the sun is setting and it's getting a little bit cooler out, that is a primo place to be casting.
And the thing is, this is like July on that stuff is weeds, rocks. It can be interchangeable. Just, I would be looking for what the hot bite is like. In July, like, is it the weeds, is it the rocks, is it a combo, you know? I can think of a bunch of rocks with weeds, and July is pretty much, my thought is that's some double eights and some bucktail stuff. August, however, I really start focusing on reef structures because it's like the weed growth in Canada is a different ball game where it can, like, we're getting into August, it can be a little ratty already sometimes. It's not pristine. You know, some years it is and some years it's not, but it depends on when I'm fishing. If I'm fishing the first week in August, I'm fishing it differently than I fished the last week in August. So I'm really thinking rocks in August. I'm thinking rocks, I'm thinking reefs, I'm thinking points.
you know, getting on that thermal, and those fish just move out to that stuff. You know, they're sort of dumb playing shallow. So, you know, I would fish July and August differently each way, but my thought, and me and the guru nailed it, man. And we're saying it's hot rocks.
Hot.
It's a god. Anyway, think about the rocks in the evening, weeds in the morning. Those weeds are going to hold the thermal a little bit when it's colder. Check them both, though. Next up is Rick. Rick said, when does color matter and how much does it matter? Wow. Cutting right to it there.
Not beating around the bush.
I've had a very few in my fishing career, very few times that I felt like color was the determining factor in
absolutely
a bite.
I'm the same way. It doesn't matter that much.
But, dude, like, you've been hot on grape flame, though.
That's true.
But is it a matter of, like, okay, so you did that trip a couple weeks ago. Is you're in the front. Booker was with you. You were throwing a 700 Booker tail grape flame. He was throwing, like, what, eights and fives and...
He was throwing all sorts of stuff. That 700 Booker tail grape flame was just on fire.
But and were his 500s the same color?
They were the same color, and they weren't as productive.
Right. So it's that age-old argument. Is it color or is it size? I'm just throwing it out there, right? Mm-hmm. You know, I don't know, man. It's just like one of those things of, like, I always tell people, like, when I'm guiding and stuff, they'll say, how much does color matter? I'll say, I'll let you know when I know.
Yeah.
I mean, I feel like it's one of those things more often than not I stumble into if it's a predominant color thing.
It's trial and error. You got to figure it out kind of for yourself. You just got to keep trying stuff.
I stumbled into a like this greeny goldy thing one time, right? And here I'm in the back of the boat just kicking butt with this green and gold thing. And you go, I mean, some bodies of water have a color, some bodies of water don't.
Mm-hmm.
You know, the best advice I ever heard on that is that match the hatch. You know what I'm saying? If you're fishing like a tulipy thing, yeah, you might want to be like with tulipy or trout or whatever sort of the bite is. But, you know, at times it's about reading the water and it's about reading the forage. And I think it becomes a matter of like a balance between forage and water color. You know,
absolutely.
I mean, there's some places where, like, if you're not throwing crappie, forget about it.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so how much does it matter? Sometimes it can matter a tremendous amount. Sometimes it doesn't matter at all. You know, I love the question. I like how Rick posed it. And it's like, does it matter and how much does it matter? Sometimes it matters tremendously.
And sometimes it doesn't. Muskies are weird, my friend.
They're weird. One thing I've played with and sort of the way I get there with, like, the color thing, right, is let's say I'm like, okay, if I'm, you know, and it's just so stupid, but black and nickel, right? Black bucktail nickel blades. I don't care what bucktail it is. Such a common bucktail.
Mm-hmm.
If we're moving fish on that, then I might go purple. I might go like a dark blue. I might see if that matters. You know, it's like, color is a secondary concern to me after I've found the right size. I don't know. I mean, like, do you feel that way? It's like color's about catching.
I think it is. It is technique. It is about size. And then all the way at the bottom of the checklist of after you get all this stuff checked off, color's at the very bottom.
Right. I don't think somebody that's like doing crappy cast and crappy figure eights is going to have the right color on and just get his shit rocked. I mean, it can happen, but, you know, I've seen it where it's just a little bit of dialed in. I mean, there's not a magic bullet. I was saying that with Joe with the moon phase. It's like color's not going to trump technique. Color's not going to trump patterning. It's not going to trump moon phase or weather. But once you're dialed in on a body of water, start buying more baits in that color because, dude, here we are. And me and you've been on a trip where color mattered, though, and we haven't even touched on it because, like, that we were on that Lake of the Woods trip where it was white belly perch or nothing.
Yeah.
For
yeah,
days.
For days, that is what they wanted.
And we were fighting for, like, whoever had on the baby depth rater in white belly perch, that was it.
Yeah.
That was it. And it was like everybody else was just out until that guy's silly enough to put that thing down and somebody's going to grab it.
my last July trip with Joe and Jazz is that I was throwing this goofy clown pattern that these fish had never seen before, and it was just unbelievably hot. And then when we came back up in August, color pattern died. They didn't care about that pattern at all.
Yeah, you just got to spend your time and figure it out and sort of go from, like, if you're moving them on dark stuff, play around in the dark spectrum. If you're moving them on light stuff, play around on the light spectrum. Tyler, me and you did it on our trip, man, when we were rocking it out, is we found the right size, and then we played with color a little bit where it was just like, okay, this is the right color. That's the one. And it wasn't from one fish. It was from like six fish.
Yep.
And I think that's the way we're having problems getting answers, because it takes a minute to get there. So, excuse me, I'm Pepsied up and ready to rock here. And we're also, Tyler just got off the boat. I just got off the boat. It's nonstop. You guys hear me crying and whining on the podcast. It just never ends. I love it. Next up is Matt. Matt says, this is for Joe or any other Eagle River area expert. Well, I am not an Eagle River area expert. Tyler, you have to immediately become an Eagle River area expert.
The pressure is on.
The heat is on. Anyway, I'm wrecked, people. I'm sorry. I'm very tired. I think I had like two tacos and seven Pepsis. Anyway, he says, I've been fishing the Three Lakes side of the chain for a long time and been getting straight skunked forever. What type of structure do you focus on in such a large, diverse body of water? Any advice you could give me would be great. I'm going to jump in here real quick.
You got it.
You hear me pecking at the desk, people. I'm pecking at the desk because that question got me moving. It's not that big and it's not that diverse. Sorry. It's not. Hate to say it. Here's the deal. Don't ever think that. Okay. If you look at Three Lakes chain and you look at that stuff, it's not that big. Tyler, how many miles of water do we fish, dude?
Miles and miles. It was endless, folks.
Like, I cover, and what I do, I cover about 50 miles regularly, like my stretch of water. And
we were boating forever.
Boating, And I'm saying that, Matt, not because I'm trying to diminish you. I'm saying it like, don't get overwhelmed by it, because it's really not that much. Unless you're rowing it, it's not that much.
Yeah.
So break it down into small chunks. That's my biggest thing I tell people all the time. Don't try to like take everything as one. Break it down to the areas. Break it down to the zones. You know, Joe's talking, was it littoral zone or latonic? I think it's littoral.
Littoral.
I'm Pepsied up here, folks. And I will fight you on the podcast, Tyler. Drop them and let's go, son. Anyway, I'm teasing. Anyway, break it down to small chunks, right? On a body of water like that. I know I'm not the Eagle River expert, but I'm pretty good at breaking down bodies of water. Take small chunks, examine, observe, and make notes, right?
And that's a great way to do it.
The other thing is this, and I'm going to let you chime in. You got to have your Eagle River expert hat on after this. Eagle River in the summer is about weeds, and it's about major structure. Because these bodies of water, when I say they're not that complex, they're not that structurally complex. They're edge complex. You know, so you've got humps out in the main basin, but you've got edge and you got weeds. Am I wrong, Tyler?
No, you're 100% correct. It's lakes up here are mostly bowl shaped lakes that are just basically only weed lines. Maybe a little bit of rock structure.
So, Matt, I would tell Matt, stay away from the open basin unless you're an experienced troller. So focus on that edge. So where are we fishing, Tyler? 15-foot break into 0 inches.
Yeah, I would fish. First, I would start on the weed lines. I would highlight all the major lake points that have strong weed lines on them, and I'd fish every single one of those. I would follow the weed lines down into any inside turns that fish would be sitting there to ambush and spray.
Right.
And then I would focus on any rock humps that you feel like you would be able to fish.
And if you're like struggling, if we're like, we're just getting our butts whipped out there, right? Mm-hmm. And that's fine. I mean, this is why we don't do last names. This is why we keep it simple, and we're not picking on anybody. But sometimes you just got to take it back to basics, Matt, and say, you know what? It might not be where I'm fishing, it's how I'm fishing, and that's my gut. Because absolutely. Eagle River chain and that area is full of fish.
There's fish everywhere, yeah.
Right. So we just talked about the PMTT. There's tons of fish. Yes, there's pressure, though, right?
Mm-hmm.
So what I would focus on is, okay, if you're a bucktailer and bucktail's your main go-to, make sure you're really good at throwing bucktail. So visit sections of the app and watch videos or read stuff about how do I up my bucktail game. If not, focus on that. Then focus on my crankbait game and focus on my other elements to make sure that it's less about where I'm fishing and it's more about how I'm fishing. That's my gut. That's my knee jerk reaction on a chain like that is make sure that your skills are in place before we start worrying about patterning and things outside of that. Right. So, because right now, if I'm talking July Eagle River chain, I'm just throwing it out here. Tell me when I'm wrong. Right now, it can be about small bucktails. It can be about crankbaits and topwater. Correct.
You nailed it.
Okay. That's classic northern Wisconsin. So I'm going to throw a single blade bucktail. I'm going to throw a double blade bucktail. I'm going to throw a shallow rate or a slammer or a crane bait or whatever, small crankbait. I'm going to throw a top rater. I'm going to throw a fat bastard. I'm going to throw a pacemaker, whatever your tail plopper of choice is, and that's it. Narrow your baits down to three baits and start fishing weed edges until you put a fish in the net.
Yep.
That would do
You're going to get an opportunity at some point right. fishing weed edges. They are there, and they
there's
eventually
a fish
one
there. And that's where I'm just trying to think from his perspective, war of attrition.
Yep.
You know,
he's got to grind it out.
Grind it out. And if you've been grinding that long, then start at ground zero and go, okay, I'm going to find a weed edge, and I'm going to drift my boat down the weed edge, a cast length off of it, I'm going to pick it apart and fish it right. So what could be wrong is not a structure thing. It could be a boat control thing. It could be a retrieve and presentation thing. It could be a lot of things. So take her back to zero. Get focused on weed edges with bucktails, cranks, and topwaters. Get focused on speed and depth control. That's the most important thing you can do. You know, there's 30 inchers on Eagle River chain just dying to get in your net.
Yeah,
I mean, you know what I'm saying? Like, and I'm not diminishing the chain, and I'm not saying that in a bad way, dude. What I'm saying is, like, there's still dummies, is what I'm getting at.
Yep,
there's some dummies out there where, you know, you've been on trips with me where we have no confidence.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm just being, you know, we try to be as honest we can. But me and you have grounded out for 4 days before going. I would choke my own mother out or beat her over the head with a tire iron to catch a 22 incher.
Yeah.
I mean, we
get it.
I love you, Mom. I'm not going to, you know, but if it comes to it, sometimes I got to put a muskie in the net, you know, and I get it. And that's the thing of like, focus on the basics, take it down to ground zero. Tyler, do you think this late in the year, you know, we're talking July and you guys have it at a ton of pressure. You know what I'm saying? There's a ton of pressure, but there's a good amount of fish there. Has it gotten to the point where bucktails aren't going to work on that chain, or what do you think? You chime in and let me have it.
Bucktail fishing is really good right now.
Okay.
Water temps are really high. Speed, to me, speed does not matter as much. You can go fast. If you want to go a little slow, whatever. Speed's not a big issue because the water temps are real high. Bucktail fishing is actually the hottest I've seen in a couple of years.
Okay. So there you go. So bucktails are not out of the question. You guys caught a fish today on bucktails on that chain.
Yeah. Yeah, we got one today.
On the same Eagle River chain this guy's talking about. Mm-hmm. So focus on that. I know 500 series Booker tails are working. I know 700s are working, which means, you know, if you don't have those baits, it doesn't matter. A giant killer will work. A muskie mayhem, a spanky, that'll all work. What I would do if I'm hard up and I'm trying on a body of water like that, strap on a bucktail and just go till you catch.
Mm-hmm.
You know, go yep. till you catch, and if it's cold front, cranks, and throw that topwater in the dark. Man, I think we hit it. We're trying our best here, but I would love to hear back from you, Matt. Write us back and let us know sort of what you're thinking.
If we've ever simplified or not, I'd love to know if it works for you to just get back to basics. Up next is Thomas. How do you think the shutdown of the border will affect muskie fishing in Canada?
Oh, we've talked about this so much.
Oh, buddy, I'm going to tell you right now. The guy, what's his name? Let me scroll up here real quick. Let's hear from Shane J that wrote the question about fishing those shield lakes. All right, let us know how it is, because I can tell you, I know how it is right now, because I've heard from some dudes. It's baller. Man, I hate to rub it in. The water temps in northern Wisconsin are hot. It was hot.
81. It was 81 to 82 today.
Right. So you guys were having a lake jump to get away from 80s.
Yeah.
So, you know, Canada is warm, which means active fish, which means the few dudes that are up there, they are kicking butt from what I've heard. Right. Yeah, Birdie told me today, you know, there's guys even crossing St. Clair into Canadian waters and kicking butt, which is, don't do that. But anyway, but temperatures are warm up there. They're doing well. Here's what I think. And we're just pulling out of our butts here. I think the lack of pressure, and essentially we're getting an entire, it's going to be what? We're at 12 months now. Almost. It's going to be 24 months. It's going to be 2 years before a lot of these fish see a bait.
Yeah, it's going to be, when we go back up there, it's going to be insane. Yeah,
if you've
good.
Thought about, hey, I'm thinking about going to Canada and haven't thought about doing it yet, next summer's the year. The summer,
it's,
dude.
It's going to be one of the best years ever recorded. It's going to be insane.
I don't know, and nobody knows the answer to this. You can guess or you can speculate. It's all anecdotal information. I don't think a muskie's going to remember a bucktail 2 years later.
No, absolutely not. They're not. They have pea-sized brains.
I don't think it's going to be like if they got caught. I can imagine. Like, here's my thought, and I'm just throwing it out there. Let's say me and you were on Crow Rock with Joe, right? And yep. 2 weeks before Elmer Jensen came through there, or whoever, I'm just making up a name here, Tommy Thompson comes through there, and he was throwing mag 10s and he caught a fish on it. Yeah, we're not going to catch it the next week we're there on 10s. I don't know if these fish can remember 2 years ago that mag 10s were a bad thing. I don't know. My guts tell me that, like, it's going to be the biggest waylay butt kicking you've ever seen next year.
It's going to be crazy, man.
You know, back to, hey, we're moving big fish on blades because they haven't seen it. Now, with that being said, I fished a lot of low pressure stuff up there where some of those tricks don't work, but I think some of these bodies of water are just going to be on fire and it's going to be easy. I could be completely wrong, but if the weather holds out, next year should be explosive in Canada. Because I read an article today. It was from the Toronto Tribune, I believe, or something like that, where a guy that owns a camp up there, I'm not going to say his name, but they do muskie guiding there. He's down 95% on his bookings.
Mm-hmm.
Think about that. 95% across the board for the year. Because
that's awful.
Most Canadians are not moving in between provinces.
No.
You know what I'm saying? So they're staying pretty locked down. So, like, it's the lowest pressure it's ever been. I mean, I bet you there's more fishing pressure up there in 1965 than there is this year.
Absolutely.
You know, you've got fish that are... Yeah, I think, I don't know if they're going to be dumb, but I'll tell you what, I'm going to be there.
Me too. We're going to be there. Sure.
You know, I mean, me and you talking about much. What else do you think? What else do you think will happen there? I mean, is it going to be?
I think it's going to be all hell breaking loose. It's going to be crazy.
The one thing I'd say is this: is once all this crap's done, right?
Mm-hmm.
Once all the COVID crap and all that's done, make your reservations. I will say that. I'll big a shout out to the Shum Shum boys. You know who you're talking about. I had some Kentucky boys on the boat, and we were talking about that.
that you better be making your plans now, because everybody's chomping at the bit, and the guys that know what it's going to be like are ready to rumble. You know, you're going to have some fish that are going to be they didn't see a bait.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, period. There's just not enough Canadian pressure to mount to a hill of beans. Anyway, I'd love to talk about that forever, but I'm going to move on to Dan. Dan says, I noticed that Joe Booker and Steve and everybody else constantly are modding their baits. Excuse me. He says, so my question is, why are you guys modding your baits, and why and when should I mod my tackle? Well, I'll throw that out there and just go like here. I modify my baits once I have identified a pattern that I can capitalize on. And that's the same thing with Joe too. It's like, it's a little bit of a read on the water. Like, you're reading the water a little bit and going, hey, like, the waters tell me I need to do this. And it's also too, if like you did a little bit of it with the bait and you go, oh, I got a fish respond, I better get my bait to do more of that. Does that make any sense?
Oh, like, yeah. Yeah.
You know, it's just like that. It's not like, I mean, there's sometimes I'm sitting around cooking up an idea, but it's not a matter of like solely like sitting in the shop and going, I want a bait to do this. A lot of it's just like purpose made. Like, if I need this tool, I'm going to modify the tools I already have until I get what I need.
Yeah. It's situational. I mean, on the water.
It's like that big topwater you made. Yep. You know, you modded a top raider to get some more glug out of it.
Mm-hmm.
And it's just like, that wasn't because you were sitting around dreaming it up. It was because you needed it.
Yeah.
You know, and that's the thing. That's why Joe's doing it. That's why all of us are doing it. It's like, you know, it's like we were talking about in the moon face thing with Joe. It's like 1 + 1 + 1 = 3. You know, it's mm-hmm. it's a matter of like, I got here because of these other factors. A lot of times it's I'm slowing the rise of a minnow bay, or I'm getting stuff to suspend, or I'm getting to sink. You know, it's because of cold fronts. It's because of tough conditions. And like, when things get tough, I start digging around a little bit and start rummaging. And that's another thing, dude, like, sort of excited. Me and you found this out. We'll see how it plays out, and hopefully it comes out the muskie shows. That sort of the first bait I've come out with is coming out.
Yep.
Which is going to be which is going to be the Rippin' Raider, which is this really flat falling, semi suspending jerk bait. You know,
it is a killer jerk bait.
And it's not, you know, it's not a bulldog. It's not a hard head. It's not any of these things. It was like purpose made. And like on a couple of episodes of Joe's show this year, banged some fish on it. And it was just like, that was our first like 3 days of the trip, was that one bait.
Yeah, that's all the fish wanted.
That was
a major cold. It was a major cold front, and they weren't susceptible to any traditional tackle.
Nothing would work, and that was a tailor made thing. They were like, this I've seen. You know, it was sort of like I pulled that bait. I went, I've seen this before. You know, and yeah. It's because I've played that game, and that's where a lot of that comes from. You know, a lot of my spinnerbait mods, a lot of stuff that Joe's done with these bucktails, you know. But one thing, Tyler, one thing, if you want to get the modding thing, the easiest thing for me is thinking about like bucktails, you know, and you can play with grubs, you can play with weighting, you can play with all this stuff, but it's all situational. You know, at this point in my muskie career, and I know Tyler's and everybody else is like, you have baits that are already pre-rigged because you only whip that bait out when
the situation presents itself.
Yeah, absolutely, man. So anyway, oh goodness, we're getting through them here. I only have to be up in like 5 hours. This is wonderful. Anyway, Austin says, hey guys, I'm really enjoying your podcast. Definitely the best I've listened to. Well, we appreciate that. It's the only thing that gets me through the 10-hour days of work. Well, that is some hard work, and we salute you for working that hard. He said, I'm a really big walleye fisherman. I started fishing for muskie about 3 years ago and didn't have any success. After listening to the podcast, it has increased my knowledge, and I've tried many new tactics and really honed in on my basics. He said, I finally got my first muskie a few weeks ago and wanted to thank you guys at the podcast and the app. Thank you so much. That's why we're here. He said, my question is, the next time I went fishing after
I caught my first muskie. I had a follow-up on a flap tail. As soon as I went into the figure eight, the muskie slowly sank away and then darted off. What is the best tactic, and how do I deal with figure eights in top water? Lay it on him, Tyler.
That's a good one. Well, with top water, when you do your figure eight, I like to go underwater. Just do a normal figure eight, say with like a bucktail. You do the figure eight, it's underwater. Do the same with the top water, bring it underwater. When a muskie sinks and darts away, it sometimes they just go away because they don't give a darn about your bait. They're whatever, screw that bait. Sometimes they reposition themselves for a perfect ambush because they're weird and they're predators, and that's they do their weird muskie thing.
Mm-hmm.
And my recommendation is, first when we get a follow like that, do a bunch of figure eights. Do a bunch of them, a bunch of them, a bunch of them until you get sick of it and until you are confident that muskie will not strike. I've had it before where a muskie darts away and I do eight figure eights, and all of a sudden he comes back and just inhales my bucktail or topwort or whatever it is. And you can do that. And sometimes what works, if say on a topwater, if they're following a topwater, I've had this happen before, is you throw back fish a little bit, then come back to them and throw a double eight back on them and bulging it under the surface where it's almost breaking the surface of the water. Sometimes this is not a guaranteed tactic, but sometimes if they won't hit a top water, they'll hit just a slightly subsurface bait.
Absolutely.
None of this the musky thing that I'm saying is like 100% guaranteed to work, but those are some things that I would try personally to get it. Sometimes you just cast back like a little JB Rattler right after you figure eight. Have it rigged up and just do, boom, three casts, fan cast that area, and then move on.
Absolutely. Dude, that's one thing that reminds me. I need to call Lee. It's just like we've talked about him being on the podcast like a million times. I'll get Lee from Today's Angler on here shortly. He's a great dude, because I am curious like what his move is on the flap tail there, boat side.
Yeah.
Because it's just a different bait. I'd think that blade knocking around there, you could sort of work it like a bucktail and jam her down and stuff. But that reminds me, thank you for the remind. I'll call Lee and get him on here. But, you know, Tyler, you nailed it with that. And the thing is, this is like, if you see him just slump off, though, like if you're a new angler, don't be afraid to just keep working that fish, though. You know, mm-hmm. Jam that bait down there. That's the biggest thing I run into, like, with people that's like, if we're throwing topwater, they feel like once they're boat side that it's over. It's just not. It's never over until you've put that bait subsurface, whether it be a top raider or whatever. Top raiders and tail ploppers are great because they work almost like a bucktail.
They still spin underwater.
Yeah, they still spin. They're moving and grooving there, so you can definitely catch a bunch of fish there. You know, that flap tail, and then, like, we get into, like, a pose giant jackpot or a dancing raider. You know, a lot of those become odd. You know, so mm-hmm. I understand that, like, you know, with a jackpot or a dancing raider or a weagle or whatever, a lot of times I'm jamming that thing under the water and getting it to look like a glide bait. Whack, 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 you know, side to side, just like it was working on the surface. And I've converted some of those. I don't think there's a magic, unless it's a top plopper, tail plopper, blah, 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 blah bait. You know, there's not a silver bullet, though. You know, you get into, depending on what bait it is, how kooky it gets. But, Tyler, you nailed it. I'm going to shut up and keep moving here. Next one up is Jason. Jason says, thanks for taking my question. I live in Indiana. There's a 5,000-acre lake that the DNR has been stocking at over one fish per acre for years. The main forage in the lake is shad. No one can seem to figure these fish out. A bass fisherman will catch one from time to time, and they show up in the DNR trap nets during egg collection for stocking. I'm determined to figure them out this fall. Any suggestions or advice would be greatly appreciated. Jason, you sound like a candidate that would be perfect, Tyler, sometime in the fall. If you want to email me about the Muskie 360 road trip, I'd be interested in coming up there.
Absolutely. Yeah.
That'd be a fun one on a weird lake like that. You know, we're definitely, everybody else has emailed us where we've got those, but that's another one that'd be interesting. We're trying to plan sort of a route. So if you're in Indiana, we'd love to talk to you about that. Anyway, shoot me an email. when you get into shad based stuff, is this. Shad love being pelagic or pelagic, however you want to say it, tomato, tomato, whatever. Anyway, what you're running into is this. Bass fishermen will catch them from time to time, which means they're there. You just got to augment your tactics and find out what they want. A lot of times on shad-based reservoirs or lakes or wherever, you can outsize them on baits a lot of times. So I would recommend going with like downsized baits. Don't throw like 10s. Don't throw 8-inch, 9-inch, 10-inch baits all the time. Focus on that 5 to 8-inch range and see if that'll help you out a little bit. The other thing on shad-based reservoirs or lakes is that shad are easy to come by. I mean, that's the thing, is these fish just get fed. And it's like a never-ending supply of food for them. So they become lazy, they're docile. So speed can be an issue. So all the environmental things might be saying, hey, I need to fish fast. I should fish fast. And really, it's about slowing down. Tyler, you've seen me do this, that on a shad-based body of water, sometimes you got to creep it to stand out from the pack.
It is unbelievably painful.
It can be, yeah, it can be ridiculous because it's hard to compete against meat. You know, yeah. And shad are just prolific breeders. And so that can be an issue. What I would do is this, is just if you're struggling and it's not clicking and you got that kind of level of stocking, one per acre, and they've been, you know, if it's one per acre, there's 5,000 in this thing, 5,000 acres, not that small. I'm sure there's more than that. Break it down to small sections. You know, dig into your mapping. Where should they be? Why should they be there? And go small. You know, don't try to catch the biggest fish in the system. Once you move one or two or three and you got a feel for them, then you know where they're at, because those shad will keep those things moving. I encounter that often where the fish really don't establish a home range because it's just far easier for them to follow the shad around the place. You know, they just follow them around and go, well, this is the never-ending buffet, you know, and they might not even go to the weeds. They're like, I could follow this shad school around for months. So that's
I'm going to get fat on shad.
Exactly. No joke. So that'd be the thing, but I hope that helps. Shoot us an email on that. Next up is Matt. Matt says, I'm looking for musky advice. Well, you came to the right place. So the waters I fish, excuse me, I'm hiccuping. That's how many Pepsis I've had here, folks. Sorry. Take another drink. Did it sound like a drink? It's like... the most professional podcast in all of musky fishing is the Musky 360 podcast. One more drink here, folks. All right, that one's cashed out. Matt says, the waters I fish are trophy musky waters with low density and clear water. I've been moving 5+ fish a night, but have yet to actually boat a fish this summer, as many of them get skittish near the boat. Do you have any tips to... wow, that just hit me like a ton of bricks. Folks, I'm going to black out here on the podcast here for a moment. I'm teasing Tyler. He says, do you have any tips to improve getting fish into the boat? What it is, I'm going to tell you real quick. We're going to take a break here for a second. I am so freaking tired. I have guided like a billion days in a row, Tyler.
I know.
You were down here, and I was actually guiding with you. I was like, hey, this is Tyler. He's going to ride around in the boat, and then we're going to drop you off. Wow. Anyway, we're dealing with gin clear. We're dealing with trophy water, and he's moving 5 a night, but he hasn't boated one all summer yet. Man, I'm telling you right now, is mid-cast triggers. And me and you were talking about, you know, I was telling you about some of these awesome places I know on the West Coast with those tigers.
Yep.
And those tiger muskies, like, they don't like coming into the boat.
They got that pike DNA in them.
Yeah, they like breaking off 10 feet away and going, hey, glad you got to see me. Hey, here I go, buddy. Hi. You know?
Hi.
Anyway. But you got to come back for the third one. It's more awkward when I do that. what I'm thinking with those fish, if you're dealing with that, is it immediately, like I said, with the tiger thing. And the way I overcame the lack of boat side figure eight possibilities with tiger muskies was I got really focused on what am I doing in the middle of my cast. You know, so like with a glide bait, let's say we're throwing a Phantom, we're throwing a glide raider, we're throwing a Hellhound, whatever. Is we're going to focus on like a dead stick beside the boat, right? On a negative or neutral fish. If he's not hot, I'm going to dead stick the thing. So I started dead sticking it 20 feet out and going, listen, this fish hasn't came in and hit yet. So I'm pretending that it's like a figure eight scenario 20 feet from the boat. Before he can even see me, before he knows I'm there, I'm already pretending that fish is there and I'm doing a dead stick technique. You know, I'll walk the dog with some pauses. I'll walk the dog. And then when I feel like I'm in that 20 feet zone, I'll just let that thing fall and then whack, 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 bring him up, let him fall again and do that away from the boat. You know, that doesn't work great with bucktails, but you know, when you get in your crankbaits, that might be the time to give it a big pause and let it float up and then jerk it down. Try to get that strike away from the boat if they're skittish. If they just don't want to come in, there's nothing you can do about it. You know,
and I would have to say also, Ed, you want to time when you're fishing correctly.
Yes.
And, you know, in clear water, yeah, pay attention to the forecast. You got a super dark, cloudy day.
Get out there.
That you need to be out there. Get off work. Screw work. Who needs to work anyway?
Yeah.
Go fishing. That is the time, even trying just going out in the middle of the night and just casting.
Well, you just said the magic word, dude. I didn't even think about that.
Low light.
At nighttime.
In clear water, they can see you. Nighttime, yeah. They can't see you.
Get out there at night. I mean, these fish, if it's trophy water, I mean, they may have been caught before, which is a possibility. Or, I've been on gin clear stuff where it's just like, you feel like you can't do anything right. You feel like you're just out there to move fish. I mean, if you're moving that many a day, you know where the fish are.
Yeah, back at night. Exact same spots, working the same way.
Yeah, working the same way, maybe bigger and slower. That would be that would be the best answer is the cover of darkness.
In the dark.
In the dark.
The monsters come out.
You merely adopted the darkness. I was born in it. Anyway, that's what I would do. The guru nailed it. If fishing at night is not your thing, then hand grenades also work.
Kentucky redworm.
Kentucky redworms. Me and Tyler have been very successful with just shooting muskies. Someone else will move it, and as it's coming in the boat, your boat partner just shoots it.
Yeah. We just bow fish for muskies.
We do. Oh, God. You just took it somewhere. I'd rather it be shot in the head than bow fish. That's like the worst thing. Oh, my God. We just drive around with a Zane, you know? It's fine. Hand grenades, whatever you got to do to get your trophy. Man.
Kaboom.
That's the new Joe Booker bait. Kaboom. It's like, it's just a bait. When they touch it, it explodes. It's just a hand grenade with the number 10 in front of it. You just reel it in, he bites it. That pulls the pin, kills him on the instantly. Oh, man, I'm sure Matt found that to be really helpful. The last one, which obviously we're down the rabbit hole here. I'm down the Pepsi hole, so we're going to wrap it up with Jim C. He says, do you guys measure all your muskies or just eyeball it?
I have not measured a muskie in a long time. I just eyeball and say, whatever. I don't care.
Yeah, it doesn't matter. I mean, as a like guiding, what I do is I tell people, hey, I'm really good at calling these. If you're desperate for a measurement, we can measure it. I mean, until I think it is above a 4-footer, I don't measure.
Yeah, it's whatever. It's not important.
It's not important because no matter what you laughed about this, Tyler, it's like no matter what you say, somebody's like, that thing, I don't care what you said, that's a 32. Who cares?
You could be holding a 50 incher that you measured, and someone go, "That's a 30 incher."
I know better. I caught five muskies this decade. Shut up. Who cares? You know, I don't even tell people how big fish are anymore.
No, it's just not important.
Yeah. Let's all line up and measure them, boys. Get yours out. How big's yours, Tyler? Smack her out here. I'm talking muskies. I didn't say what we're measuring here. Get her out. Let's measure them. You know,
zip.
Who cares? Mine's zip. Who cares? Really, who cares? You know, I shout out to my Shum Shum boys again. We were laughing about it. Like, there's places like there's just not 40 inchers, period. You know, and then you got bodies of water that just like churn out 50s. Who cares? It's so dumb. I'm going to get on a tip here. I'm going to tell you real quick. Catching a big muskie does not make you special or a better person.
No, don't base yourself on a big fish.
Who cares? I know plenty of assholes that have caught big fish. You know, I don't care. A lot of assholes have caught 50s, you know, and I know some great people that are great anglers that have caught 41s. Who cares? As far as like to get to the root of that, here's the deal. If you feel like that is a special fish to you, right? Like you don't get a lot of time to musky fish and you go, wow, that's a big fish. Measure it. Absolutely. Have your bump board. Get your bump board wet. Measure that son of a gun. I don't care if it's 31 or if it's 61. If you think it's a big fish, measure it so you know in your heart of hearts this is what it was. And then keep your friggin' mouth shut and don't tell anybody how big it was.
Mm-hmm.
Who cares? I'm so sick of the frickin' dick measuring. My wiener's bigger than your wiener. Blah, 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 blah. Who cares?
In reality, they're all small.
They're all small. That was like a guru words of wisdom on the fly. The musky guru says.
I'll do it. The musky guru says they're all small.
They're all small. But that's the thing. Like, you know, with clients and stuff like that, I keep a float ruler. One of the Raleigh and Hell ones, like float rulers. So if need be, let's say it's like a 38 and I go, hey, it's a 38. And they go, hey, will you measure it? I'll grab a float rule and, you know, it's 37 and a half or it's 38 and a quarter. We're close enough, you know, moving on. Rule of thumb for me, if I think it's above a 48, I'll measure it. A lot of times you just, who cares? So I don't measure all my fish. Joe Booker hasn't measured a muskie probably since 1984.
He just doesn't care.
He's not going to sit. He's not going to line up and all right, boys, what you got?
Yeah.
Who cares? You know, I mean, some ding dong can go out tomorrow and catch a 65 incher on a Mr. Twister tail.
You're absolutely right. Yeah.
You know, so keep it fun. I mean, I think that's where we're going. Like, God, I'm so off topic with the question or off like the spirit of his question, but like straight out, like if it's an important fish for you, let's say it's your son's first muskie, let's measure that thing. If it's your wife's first muskie, let's measure it. If you haven't caught a muskie in a year and a half, measure it. If it's the biggest one you've ever seen, measure it. Outside of that, eyeball it and call it a day. I mean, I know there's a lot of clubs, and that's cool. Like, if you're in a club and you got to get an exact measure, whatever, but I'm like way down the rabbit hole on this, and I need to shut up because I'm going to say something that'll get me in trouble, but who cares? Who cares? Measure it if you want to. Don't measure it. I don't care if you caught a 31 incher and you want to call it at 42. How does it affect me negatively? It doesn't.
Not at all.
Does it hurt your feelings, Tyler?
I don't care at all.
I don't care what you call your muskie, as long as you're catching them, as long as you're having a good time. If you're miserable out there, you're always going to be miserable. If you're having a good time catching 31s, keep having a good time. That's why I love the sport. I don't care what other people catch, and no one should give two shits what I catch either. Pretty much sum it up. Who cares?
That was perfect, my friend.
Man, I am obviously pretty much in the tank right now. So, I'm going to shut up before I get shot in the head. Tyler, I'm going to let you wrap it up here because apparently, you know, people had said we had not been crazy enough. They said, you guys obviously aren't drinking enough Pepsi during the podcast for the last 2 weeks because we've been busy. I need you to take us out on an epic guru words of wisdom. On the fly, what do you got?
The guru says, just drink lots of beer.
That was pathetic, but I'll take it. I'll talk to you people next week. Thanks for putting up with our dumb asses. We love you here at the app. Talk to you later.
The Muskie 360 Podcast is brought to you by Yeti, built for the wild, Evinrude E-Tech Outboards, Joe Bucher Outdoors, the number one name in Big Fish products, and The Muskie Shop.